Hello, hi Pramod.
Hey, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you?
I'm all right.
It's afternoon for you, correct?
Yeah, it's 15:30 now, so I think it must be pretty early for you guys.
Not too bad. Luckily, I'm East Coast based, so 9:30. I guess one nice thing about everything closing early in New York is you get up early. So naturally my clock's about 6:30, 7 a.m. So midday for me.
You started pretty early then.
Oh yeah, I wake up early, but I also go to sleep early. I'm definitely not one of those entrepreneurs that pulls all-nighters and also gets up at 6 a.m.
I think that's been the trend now over the years. Like, I've also seen myself doing that. So yeah, how is COVID treating you, by the way?
COVID, I mean, of course, has been pretty detrimental, particularly here in the US, and how it's been affecting families and workers and businesses. Luckily for just me personally, I ended up moving out of the city about 2 years ago into a small town on Long Island called Montauk, and had a little project with my hands. We redid a house up here, and I've just been kind of hunkered down since March, which has been a lovely place to be for the time being, but definitely without its stressors that happen, of course, with running a business during a pandemic, which can spiral into a lot of other anxieties and stressors, of course.
And when you look at this particular situation, as an entrepreneur, I mean, it must be pretty difficult as far as thinking about the operations are concerned, before and after, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no playbook. I think one of the scariest times is about a few weeks into the pandemic, and there's lots of predictions of when is this going to get better, what's going to happen, what do we think is going to happen to the market, what will happen in the venture capital world. And I think a part of me was aching a little bit of I wish I could have an advisor who's gone through this before. It's unprecedented, of course,
There's
nothing
no
like
one. There's no
there's no one.
one.
And so it's you're a little bit stuck with your thoughts, and the ideas that you come up with at 3 a.m. because you're not able to sleep trying to think through how you can save every worker at your company's job and how you can ensure that you're taking the future opportunities that are arising with, of course, 5 million people working remotely to all of a sudden 316 million people are remote, whether they're learning remotely or they're working remotely or what have you. It was absolutely unprecedented. And yeah, that was you had to create your own playbook. I'm lucky to have co-founders because it's someone that you can rely on of, hey, we know that we're going through this for the first time together at least, and let's try to make our best bet into how we can protect the company, and our people at all cost.
What has been the learning so far? I'm just trying to emphasize on post-COVID, and how do you see this going to support you in the future?
Yeah, I would speaking operationally, just as our COO, I think one of the biggest learnings that we had was the anxieties that we are going through are an individual's anxieties, but every single person on your team is dealing with their own just headache in terms of what they're going through personally. Is my family safe? I don't know how I'm going to see this person who's across the country or across the world. Oh, I just had a tickle in my throat. Am I sick? So what we ended up doing is really rethinking how we are running the company, particularly operationally, internally. And we did a survey with our internal team of, hey, how can we support you, actually support you? Not what can you do for us, but what can we do for you? And we ended up investing in quite a few, we call pulse initiatives to make sure that we're getting our team members career coaches outside of Lithos, because of course you can't be as honest with people within Lithos as you could outside. So we got a service named Bravely for our internal team and really started to double down on ensuring that everyone's growth path was clear, reviews were fair, ensuring that you know, people felt at least they had some psychological safety at work, knowing that outside of work, we had no way of ensuring that for them in, you know, these very chaotic times.
And I, you know, personally think, you know, being an entrepreneur is perhaps a grueling and a continuous learning cycle. You know, I want to put myself into that shoe as well. And there's a lot of optimizations necessary and perhaps towards the excellence. In that regard, like, how do you see your own personal journey?
You know, it's interesting. As an entrepreneur, yeah, you always should be learning. You should always be taking in information. I've always been a fan of, if I'm not taking a course, if I'm not reading a book that's pushing my learning further outside of work, then I'm not doing my best for the company. Of course, you know, as I mentioned, like, there is no advisor for how to handle a business during a pandemic. There's no playbook. There's no article that you can read that makes you feel at ease. So I think with my personal journey, of course, being an entrepreneur is tough, right? Like, it's psychologically very tough. I think one thing my co-founder and I said to each other earlier this week is it's a strangely lonely place to be an entrepreneur during an unprecedented pandemic, because you're of course want to be there and be strong for your team and the people around you and even your loved ones that are checking in about the company. But you're of course internally, you know, questioning different things and ensuring that you can be the leader that you need to be at the company, which would also, you're still worried about how your family is doing. And, oh, I have that tickle in my throat. And should I be concerned about things outside of work as well? So I think it pushed me to new limits that I thought I was working as hard as I could pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's a hyperbole, you know, but I really thought I had pushed myself to some limits of, like, you know, working until 3 a.m., getting back up at 6, like just trying to put in my all to the company. And I had never experienced anxieties and stress that come with running a company through this. To be completely transparent and honest, even to other entrepreneurs that are listening, to make sure that they don't feel alone in this. But it was, it was absolutely a true test. But I think one thing I would like to say about myself and Rachel is we're optimists. And when we saw everything starting to change, we really wanted to double down on the opportunity that we could make a positive impact on the world by providing a way for people to move independent and not be tied to their 9-to-5 as often. So we really doubled down on, we need to get our product out to market, because if we can do this, then hopefully we can make it a norm for people to not have to work in the creative industry in large agencies or for big brands, but instead to be able to start their own studios where they'll have that independence. They'll be able to take home as much as they want into their pocket and not deal with the fees of the agencies taking, you know, part of their paychecks home. So that was inspiring, that at least we had this North Star of, this is what we've been dreaming of. We've been dreaming about a remote environment in which people are able to work independently within their studios. And the opportunity arose, which was exciting, of course, alongside all of the anxieties that come with just being a human being living through a pandemic. It was interesting to balance, but I'm definitely feeling optimistic as we're moving forward.
Yeah, indeed. And when you look at your own structure about your own company, if you think about the request or the number of clients that you had, is there a difference in terms of how you are received now pre-COVID versus post-COVID?
I think we have a fortunate response to this that maybe not other companies do, but we saw a surge in signups and interest once COVID happened. I mean, of course, you know, the spike in people working remotely, where I think before people thought we might have been a little bit crazy by creating software to enable virtual studios or agencies. But no, like, I need to go in there in person. Absolutely not. Like, this is inefficient. It's a time suck. You're not being accessible to people around the world or in other, you know, parts of the country. But also with ad agencies laying off top talent with record unemployment in the country, we were able to get fairly lucky with the amount of amazing strategic creative director X talent that were signing up for what we were doing, which was, you know, something that I think encouraged our team to move as quickly as possible to get our product up to market, which is so close as it's in beta now, and we'll be pushing it live in October, so that hopefully we can get these independent creators the, you know, back office or business operations infrastructure that they need to run their business without being an expert in legal, without being an expert in accounting, or being an account manager in the past and doing, you know, pretty intense scoping in the agency world. So that's a little bit of a lucky response in our mind, but we do also know that spending within the marketing space dropped drastically. So these individuals that are using our product are dealing with a pretty tough time as well. So we ended up doubling down on seeing if we could find our users work for free on our end to say, hey, we know that this is a pretty unprecedented time. A lead came through and they're looking for an agency to work with this. Do you want this work? We won't take any fees, so that we could continue to give back to the community and ensure that we're supporting them through, you know, their individual struggles as well.
Mm-hmm. And what has been the response so far?
The response so far has been really, really exciting for me as an entrepreneur, someone that's been using this technology to work at my own agency for a while. And, you know, of course, people asking, hey, what are you all using to be able to scale the business? How are you keeping all of this organized when you're running so many projects at once? Mm-hmm. And it seems to be that our hunch was correct, that the other studios are like, this is going to change the game for me. I'm a creative. Creatives at heart don't necessarily mean that you're an expert at Excel at heart. So if we can at least save some of the admin time or the sunk cost time for individuals using our platform, so they can either make more money because they're spending more time doing billable work, or enjoy their lives a little bit more. Maybe they have time back in their day that they can go to the beach on that Sunday afternoon, or they can meet that friend for coffee on a Tuesday, then I'm going to be happy. And it seems like that is the direction that it's going as we're leading up towards public launch.
Mm-hmm. And when you compare your company and the existing solutions in the market, how uniquely are you placed there?
It's interesting because we're talking to a market that, in my opinion, has been ignored for so long. When you think about previous freelance marketplaces or tools, they're mostly targeting the freelancers that you might see on Fiverr or Upwork. You know, they're doing a lot of projects, but they're small dollar projects. And instead, we're targeting what we call high earning independent. So individuals making over, you know, 100K a year already on their own independent, and helping them scale up their studios, where the only way to scale up services is with more people, and with more people comes more chaos. We know that's common sense, but it really can get chaotic. I remember the pain of us doing the exact same thing and it being 4 a.m. and an Excel sheet number wasn't lining up perfectly with an invoice that we had sent out, and I thought that I had just lost my mind. that's what technology saves that for you. And so it compared to other people in the market, this has been a strangely ignored section of people that are successful. They're director level individuals running their own studios, but they don't want to start that huge agency and they don't want to go work for the big brand that they could absolutely work for. They're turning down work because they just don't have enough time, but they can increase their earnings. So that's one differentiator in the market. And the other is, one stance Rachel and I made early, you know, we came from the ad space, the agency space, and a lot of the times you bill on hours, which to me, frankly, is a bit unethical. You put a dollar amount or a price on someone's time. How is that really fair? So that if someone is giving the exact same output and the person can do it in 4 hours versus 8 hours, they make half as much as the person doing it, you know, double as long. And not only that, but it does a little bit chain people to their desk for a certain amount of time, which is, again, unethical in various ways. So we threw that out and we did a points-based system, so an outputs-based system based on the level of expertise needed for this deliverable, the level of effort that goes into it, and the level of uncertainty with each deliverable. And so our pricing system is something that we're curating not only from our own experience from the past few years of running an agency, but we're starting to curate from our community so that we actually can break through the black hole of how much do marketing services cost? That you can probably Google it right now and say, hi, how much should I pay for my logo? You're going to get anywhere between $5 to $100,000, I'm sure, with how prices range. And these studio owners are off on their own and they've no idea what to charge for something, and nor do they have the backing of an agency to say, oh, you know, we are, you know, this large agency, part of, you know, Ogilvy or what have you, so we can charge this much. So if we can instead really back up collaboration over competition within our community so that everyone's collaborating on, hey, this is how much I'm charging for this. You should charge more. You should be making more on this. You're not crazy for charging more. Then I think we can create a better environment for these individuals moving forward and hopefully continue to stay competitively advantageous to other companies that are frankly ignoring this, you know, really, really amazing and talented market.
And if you have to sort of, you know, explain me a little bit about the platform itself that you have, when you look at the, for example, if I'm a company that wants to, I don't know, do an advert or something, then I need a specialist on that. And then is it more of a open bid sort of system where you channelize the right resources for the things that I'm searching for, or how does that really work?
Yeah, so this is one of the changes that we made actually during COVID, is instead of really focusing on the matching of an organization who needs to find talent to, you know, do their rebrand or website or marketing campaign, instead we've focused fully on finishing out the SaaS platform that the individual creators will use to actually execute on that work. So when they're coming in, of course, the heart of every project is the scope that you're putting together. So you're putting together the scope, not only negotiating with the client, but they negotiate with their team members as well, because they might not be working full-time with them. Doing the back and forth between both sides can be so time consuming and very tedious. You're texting someone, you're emailing someone else, you're adding up the numbers in your Google Doc. Oh, that didn't add up correctly. Okay, I need to go back and add, you know, there's a lot of headache when it comes to that. So first starting with the scoping and pricing, and then you actually move into managing your team. So this individual who's running the studio, the client relationship, then also needs to see the project through to, you know, completion. And they're not only overseeing the client relationship, but their teammates as well, as, you know, they're really the lead here. So going through, making sure that the project is, you know, being run successfully until the very end of paying out their teammates, which gets a little bit complex with, within US law of, you know, paying out 1099 contractors to your studio versus getting paid from your client. So if we can make that all as simple as 10 clicks, that's what we're hoping to do. Because right now we're seeing that it takes anywhere between 5 to 10 hours a project of admin work to really finish out from pricing to payment.
Right. And when you are onboarding a particular freelancer in your system, how do you do that? Like, what's the process involved? Or do they just simply you know, put up their portfolios and then, you know, based on that you accept it, or there are certain process that you have, maybe a unique process that you have already built in order to make sure that there is a genuine freelancer, or I don't know, how does that work in your system?
Yes, so this is interesting. I will give a shout out here to Superhuman, which has put out a really wonderful step-by-step of how to launch a product and how onboarding should live throughout the launch. And so we've been taking a few notes of that from that book, but putting our own spin on it at times, where right now we are in private beta. We're letting in 100 studios that we believe are the perfect target audience. So when people are applying at the moment, we're looking through to say, hey, does this fit the persona per our market research? And are they going to be a good fit? Will these tools actually be able to help them? And at the end of the day, these are the people that we call our founding members. These are the people that are giving us product feedback that we're implementing into our roadmap week over week, which is crucially, crucially important. You can probably tell we are big fans of our users, and we meet with them weekly at a round table just to get their feedback, to really make sure we're at the pulse of what they need, not what we think. Mm-hmm. So these first 100 users, we're taking them through an individual onboarding, our customer success team, and each individual comes in, and after, you know, a 5-minute Q&A, we have them share their screen and start to poke around in our platform, a little bit of user testing in that way, so that they're actually creating their first project with us on the line, talking through, you know, what's confusing to them, what they love here, how quickly are they able to get this project up and running, where we're seeing, you know, it's under 10 minutes that these people are getting their first project up, running, and going, which is pretty mind-blowing, I think, to us and the users that we're on the call with. It's exciting to see. But as soon as we hit what we're calling public beta, so we won't be gating any other signups, we're working on an automated onboarding as well. And by the end of October, anyone can come in, start to use the tools, and either use them for scoping for clients or for their teammates, and actually managing the projects and teams from there, which will be an exciting, but also a brand new change for us as we continue to scale up and change quickly, which is great, but also, you want to make sure that you're containing any chaos that can come alongside with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when you are onboarding, you mentioned about the 100 users, and when you look at their response as far as them being able to be fully onboarded and being able to work around your tools, what kind of feedback do they give you as far as working around is concerned?
I think we are really, really lucky to have users who are, like, I believe our users are smarter than I will ever be when it comes to even in product development and design, as we're bringing on truly like creative directors and product directors from around the country, which is very fortunate for us. So we're getting these really, really amazing feedback, even when it comes down to like the nitty-gritty of design. Hey, this is how I would change this to make that user experience flow a little bit better. And our team truly feels like these individuals are an integral part of our product team, as our internal designers are working alongside, you know, these individuals to say, hey, how can we make your life easier? Because by the time we get to public launch, we want this to be something that you love and it's perfect for you, so that it's something that is going to make your life exponentially better and will get you from that $150,000 paycheck a year to $300,000-$400,000, which is really the end goal, is to get money back into the user's pockets.
Right. And it's interesting, the route that you're taking. And what's been the most difficult part for you, you know, so far, if you take this particular situation aside, you know, within the journey, what was the most difficult part for you?
Most difficult part. Oh, wow.
Everything was difficult, right?
You know, it's interesting. It's like, we are non-technical, first-time female founders. There's lots of challenges that can come alongside that. But at the same time, we're incredibly privileged in many, many ways. I think the part that I will hone in on is non-technical. So prior to starting Weethos, you know, I was on teams building many, you know, front-end websites in the agency world. And I think if I could go back in time, I would have taken a coding boot camp or gotten myself to be a little bit more technically savvy earlier on, because we are creatives and we're marketers at heart. And that's what we're really passionate about. We're passionate about the brand. We're passionate about our users. I think the most difficult part has been the learning curve on the technical side, which I, you know, after all this time, I'm you know, feeling very proud of where we've come. But I think that is, if I could go back and change one thing, I would have done a coding boot camp, you know, earlier on in my career, even in the advertising world, just to continue to educate myself in important areas from the get-go.
Interesting. You mentioned you came from an agency background. What sort of problem that you saw that you said, okay, you know, maybe we can do something differently? I'm sure this is something that you got, you know, working within the agency, right? So was it a more of an accidental choice, or more of a, okay, there is a problem, then, you know, you said, okay, we can jump onto this one and maybe do things differently?
It's funny thinking back at like how we started this. I mean, Rachel and I had worked together at Havas in New York, and we ended up parting ways for a little bit. I went over to 360i and maintained, you know, our friendship. And after a few years, I got a GChat. I don't know if people even still GChat anymore.
Maybe, yeah, it used to be a thing, you know. It used to be a thing.
Yeah. I got a GChat, like, how happy are you? I'm like, you know, I love my coworkers. I really love, you know, the agency, but I'm moving over to a brand that I'm just not that passionate about. I went there for CSR work and ended up working for an alcohol brand. And that's not what gets me out of bed every morning. So, you know, and she's like, hey, I want to do something. It's more meaningful to me too. We started to see this trend of everyone that we knew who was incredibly talented from the agency world was going off on their own to be a freelancer, to be a studio owner. And we were like, how can we work with those amazing people that we've always loved working with that are now no longer at the agencies to work on things that actually matter? I think that's like as simplified as it gets down to, like, how can I work on something that matters? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think I could get up every morning with like an email automation app and be like, you know what, this is my life's work. Like, I think Rachel and I are both very driven by passion, and we have to be passionate about what we're doing. Maybe that's a bit hard-headed of us, but, that's been the heart of what we did. And we did see the problem of where are all these amazing people going, and these amazing people were like, I would love to have something that makes going independent just a little bit easier. Like, this is, it's mm-hmm. so difficult what they have to go through. Like, people have to figure out how to incorporate. They need to go figure out how to do their taxes for the first time. They need to figure out how to scope and contract with clients. They need to figure out how to manage their teams. Before, they just had one job at an agency that, again, you know, may have been doing a lot of inefficiencies when running the agency, but that was all set up for them. All of a sudden, they become overnight entrepreneurs without the chance of venture capital. Well, that's a pretty hard job. So if we can solve that problem for them, then at least we can hopefully make the ability to go off on your own, get the freedom that they're looking for the work that they're passionate about. So they aren't told what to do. You need to work on this alcohol brand, but they get to choose which brands they're working on, what projects they're passionate about. I think that's really the problem that we wanted to solve, and what gets us out of bed, you know, every morning for the, you know, the past few years, until we've gotten to this point of, we need to get this product truly out to market and make sure that we're being timely with our users who right now are saying, hey, I want to start my own thing, but right now I don't even know where to start. Well, let us help you do that.
Mm-hmm. A moment ago, I sort of, you know, asked you about the onboarding process, you know, as far as these studios are independent, who wants to run their own studios are concerned. On the same side, you know, I want to sort of, you know, add a question. How do you then add the companies? How do you say, hey, you know, you would be able to find, you know, great people, you know, to work with?
That's absolutely top of mind for us. We'll coin you with the idea whenever we do move into the marketplace, Pramod. idea by Pramod. So that's absolutely something that's top of our mind. So there's really two areas that I see these tools continue to expand. One is in the marketplace area of companies coming in, wanting to work with this really amazing talent that maybe they were getting in the agency world, but now they can actually pay them directly and get a cost that is actually sustainable. The other side of this is really the network piece. So what's so interesting about this, these groups of individuals, is they have incredibly strong networking skills. This is what their career is networking in order to build relationships with their clients that they want to continue working with, or to build a relationship with that really amazing illustrator that they saw their work and really want to collaborate with. So we're looking right now at the network specific expansion of, okay, now that you have your studio, now that you have been able to take on more work that you're passionate about, how do you expand your network so that you can scale up your studio again with more people? It's the only way you scale up services. So we're thinking also about a network piece for these folks to get to know each other, start to collaborate in different ways. It's not that people are looking for, you know, another community to join where they have to go to these dinners and, you know, schmooze around. They're really looking for true collaborators or people that they can learn and work with. So that's really the two directions that we're seeing with those to continue to expand from here. But I guess it'll be, we'll let you know where we decide to move next once we've made the final decision after our public launch.
No, because I thought it was a more of a logical step, right? I think, when you say, okay, we've done a bit, now I think, you know, the other element is getting towards the business, but getting towards, finding more clients or building the network, you know, and so forth. So I thought it was a more of a logical step, you know, as, you know, being an outsider, you know.
So. No, absolutely. And it's totally top of mind for us as well. So I love the idea.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And I think, You as an entrepreneur, you know, over the years, you know, you built your own system that keeps you functioning, right? What do you think about your own support system that perhaps keeps your dreams alive?
And do you mean on like a personal life perspective?
No, I mean, you can think about your support system, right? So if you say, okay, you know, I have a dream to do this, right? So, and then you built that support system that would say, okay, you know, I need to keep on seeing that dream. And either it may mean that you are getting some kind of, let's say, support in terms of finance or in terms of network or in terms of your own personal space. How do you balance that, or what's been the support system for you?
Yeah, I guess this is interesting after coming off a comment about, you know, loneliness is, again, the privilege that we have is pretty unmatched, right? Like if I think about a support system, of course, the investors who have backed us have been some of the most wonderful people that I've had a chance to work alongside, particularly coming from even a different brain wavelength than Rachel and I are, who are very creative, very design oriented, while, you know, our investors are more business savvy and projection savvy. I just feel like every single time I step in the room, Jerry Kirilova was our lead investor in our last round, and she's on our board. She just asks such thoughtful questions that I feel like I learned so much every single time. And there's a strange sense of comfort of having someone like Jerry on your side, or our advisors like Caitlin Pierce from the Freelancers Union. Is just, it that's what calms me. And that's the support that helps me feel like I'm not crazy, or I'm not making, you know, I'm not alone in making this decision, or this isn't all just on my shoulders. I have these people around me who have their own unique, incredibly deep experience in, you know, their own realms that can help brainstorm with me, or help, you know, continue to look at the company a little bit differently. I think one curse as an entrepreneur is you might look at your company as if it's your child. As someone that doesn't have children, I don't really know if I can make this correlation, but yes. It's tough to step away from your company and look a little bit more objectively at some of the different avenues or decisions that you need to make. And having that support system of outside advisors and investors who can come in without necessarily being in the day-to-day with you in the trenches and give a new perspective, I think is crucially important, because just like our users have deep networks, it's incredibly important for entrepreneurs to have deep networks as well, because it combats the loneliness of entrepreneurship and it helps spread the knowledge that we all are learning day in and day out, where there's really no way to share it, right? It's you're in your own company and you're in your own trenches. Time is your most precious resource. How often do you have time to dedicate to other individuals who might be going through different struggles? Probably not much, but that's one thing that Rachel and I have done is every other Friday we do a Founders Friday where founders are able to grab time with us just to talk through issues that they're going through. Maybe they're raising their first round, particularly other female founders is where we've really been concentrating in support so that we can hopefully give back any knowledge that we may have soaked up from, you know, our lovely advisors and investors to date.
Indeed. I mean, especially at this moment, you know, when everything is so, you know, gray and it's so difficult, right? You need those support system to always challenge you at the same time, support you in order to be on the same direction that you otherwise wanted to be in the first place. So that's where I felt like, you know, there must be a support system that supports you to always see that dream, you know, that you saw in the first place. So that's where the question is coming from. And when you have to explain a layman, right, what your company does, you know, as far as giving a value is concerned, what kind of value that your company provides?
Well, I guess the line at the moment, to simplify it down, is we built a platform to enable independent consultants to scale up their virtual creative studios together. Mm-hmm. I think together is the word that's the most important there. With one of our values of collaboration over competition, we know that an individual can only be so strong, right? There's literal data out there of why co-founders statistically do better than just an individual founder, because that's someone that's off on their own. If we can build something that really enables collaboration and gets people to team up, to win bigger projects, to get bigger paychecks, to learn from one another, to inspire one another, that's the value that we're hoping to provide, is a space for these individuals who have been kind of cast off on their own of, okay, you left, you want to go be a freelancer, go figure it out on your own. Well, why does freelance have to be so lonely? Why does freelance have to be something that you do as an individual compared to with a group? Well, because once you start to add people, again, it adds complexity. So if we can figure out how to break down the barriers of freelance being a very individual career path, then we can unblock so many opportunities for, you know, this market, that once they start working together, they really have a collective power that can be even greater than, you know, the largest agencies out there.
I would like to switch a different context now. And I'm sort of thinking about when times are going right, when you are doing everything right and you know, you produce some results. And of course, like you need to, you know, with your company, you need to produce the results still, I believe. But, you know, let's take it in a more general sense. Like when you produce the result as it was meant to be, then you are considered as a visionary, right? On the flip side, there must be some hiccups, you know, to coming to this stage where you are almost ready to launch. Can you reflect maybe some moments where you thought, you know, maybe you're like, okay, shit, I screwed up.
Oh yeah. How many of those? Funny that you mentioned visionary. This is a little bit of a side tangent, but I'm
the thing is, like, it's always like that, right? So you start with a great idea, which you think is a great idea, right? And then if that turns out to be true and people will, you know, start to also think about the same thing, then you're considered as a visionary and then people buy in that idea. But on the flip side, if you think, okay, this doesn't go well, or maybe along the way itself, like you would have screwed up, then then you are considered something else, right? So how do you think about those aspects, right? Or maybe during this process itself, you may have felt like, shit, you know, this is not going according to the plan.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, absolutely. you can think about it a ton of different ways. If we want to even just start with product development, I think, but just to be fully transparent with anyone who's listening too, it's, I think we showed our product to our users too late.
Yeah.
I think that's a common, you know, issue. I don't know if there is a perfect answer there of like, we showed it perfectly at the right time to our users. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if any entrepreneur would ever say that, but I think that is something that had kept me up at night is we spent a long time building a hypothesis that we had on what individuals would want to see on each other's profiles. And I think we just realized too late of, hey, we actually didn't get enough user feedback on this. Let's make sure that we show this to our users. And they had wonderful ideas and feedback that I think I could have, you know, kept me awake a few nights where I'm like, oh God, you know, we should have gotten ahead of this. So absolutely. I mean, when it comes to product development, like make sure you're not building for yourself, but for your users. There also is a give and take of if you would have asked users what they wanted back when the transportation was on horses, they would have said a faster horse. They wouldn't have said a car. So you want to also balance that out with like innovation of what do you think is going to be innovative in the market that maybe even users don't know yet. So making sure that you're staying true to yourself with your innovation while also listening. I think one of the other biggest mistakes that I always feel it like pains you inside a little bit is when you hire poorly.
Yeah.
When you hire someone that's just not a perfect fit for your company. Whether it's you realize that or them, and you know, maybe it's not a culture fit or skills fit, or you know, things have changed in someone's life, that can be some of the most devastating mistakes to make. So, as I'm reading Elon Musk's, you know, book right now on, you know, how a visionary comes to life, which is, you know, of course, very interesting. He's a very interesting person. But the idea of like hire slowly, I cannot dig into that enough. Like make sure that you're really hiring someone who's a great fit, and don't hire someone for the role that you have now because you're at a startup. Things change rapidly. You need someone with a high adaptability quotient who thrives a little bit in chaos and changes. I'm one of those people. I will go ahead and raise my hand to say I would be so bored sitting in a 9-to-5 doing the same thing every day. I wouldn't be able to function. So you need to find other people who have a similar mentality of they love the change. They love the challenge. They love to solve a problem that no one else on the team has even thought about solving before. And hire based on those values rather than they're a really good person for that specific role that we're hiring for, because things are going to change in 6 months. And if that person can only do that role and nothing else, they can't adapt, then they're not going to thrive at a startup. And you're not just doing the business poorly when you hire poorly, you're doing that individual poorly because they could have taken a job somewhere else. And I think that's some of the mistakes that keep me up at night that make me continuously want to invest in our hiring process to make sure that we get it right for ourselves and for the individuals that we bring on.
I don't know if, I mean, there's a correct hiring process, but I think we have to see our own companies and see what is going to work. You know, of course, like you mentioned, a couple of things, you know, having the same drive, you know, one of the attributes that you would like to see on the new employee or, you know, your partners. I think maybe those attributes you can find, I don't know what else to look for in an employee, you know, where we can say, okay, this is the perfect match.
Totally. You know, I'm reading work rules as we speak as well. I think it's written by the head of people at Google, and there is no process. I think our company culture is so, every company culture is very unique, and ours is so different than the typical startup. I'm not a big fan of top down screaming at everyone for every little mistake and making a culture where people are scared to speak their mind that they don't agree with something. We're very much a culture surrounded by the team that manages itself, so we can run on an OKR framework of here's the goal, you figure out how to get there and meet it. It's the only way that you can survive in a remote environment. There cannot be any micromanaging. You have to totally trust your people, and you have to let them work on their own times and let them thrive in the way that works best for them. If not, then you're going to go crazy as a manager remotely. Are they, you know, is the green tag on next to their Slack? Is there, you know, that it's just not possible. So it's a balance between, you know, ensuring that there's weekly standard meetings that are non-negotiable. No one can miss for, you know, outside meetings. But then there's flexibility throughout most of the week, heads down days, enabling people to just hit a goal in the way that works best for them, even if they would do it a little differently than how you would.
Mm-hmm. And what do you value within those discussions? Because you said something interesting, like you, with this present situation, largely people are working remotely, and of course the value around providing feedback or maybe opinion is welcome, right? So what do you value yourself, like when you're working with people around, you know, who are primarily working 100% remote?
Yeah, I think what I personally, actually we've written values for our company, and one of my favorite values is hold yourself and others accountable for growth. Mm-hmm. If I can see that someone's constantly pushing themselves, constantly learning, not just asking myself or, you know, someone else in the leadership team for the answers, that's where I feel so confident in who I'm working alongside, because they're clearly curious, and curiosity is not something that you can teach. It is something that's inherent. And I think to be remote and to be running a team remotely, outside of ensuring that you've created the structure, you've created ways that you can check in on like the mental health of your employees, I think is very important. businesses don't think about that often, but it's truly a business decision that you should like be looking out for your employees. But you know, ensuring that you're providing them the guidance that then you can step away and trust them to take this to the finish line. And building up that trust is tough. You're not going to gain trust with someone on day one. But being able to create a pathway so that you eventually can step away and let this person be independent. I don't see a way in which remote work can thrive with a top-down hierarchy when that's not possible. For us, like we always have cameras on our Zoom call so that it feels a little bit more personable. We typically see each other every 6 months at a retreat or an onsite all together so that we continue to build empathy with one another. There's something different of seeing someone's face and standing next to them and having a meal with them. Of course, that couldn't happen in this summer. We did a digital retreat. Mm-hmm. And figuring out ways that you can add in some fun or some human connections in your remote environment, I think, are crucially important, because if people are sitting and working all day long and they cannot leave their house all day long, that's going to wear on them. So if you can provide them any sort of joy, like sending them a personalized box and gift, or making sure that the time that they get to meet our advisors or they get to do icebreakers with one another about, you know, silly items, not about work, I think is really important from a culture perspective.
Mm-hmm. And you always wanted to set up a culture as such, or it was more of an evolution towards that culture?
You know, I think we're dreamers. You know, maybe this is something that I've always dreamt about, of like having an inclusive culture that puts inclusivity and belonging first, that really, like, I think one thing we'll always say is diverse teams create better work. I think that is a non-negotiable in our minds, and making sure that we don't look around and everyone looks and acts like us, I think is important. So making sure that we're building a culture, which is something that we now have the power to do. Every entrepreneur has the power to make a huge impact on their company culture. And if that's not top of mind for them, then that's naive, right? Mm-hmm. Like we have it in our hands. I can't sit there and delegate this to someone else. Hey, can you create our company culture here? it's on the founders to say, hey, I'm taking a mental health day because I'm worn down, so that everyone else feels comfortable to do the same when they're worn down. Because at the end of the day, when people are worn down, they're not going to be doing their best work. So you need them to bounce back quicker. And I'm not sure that I necessarily dreamt this before starting Wethos. I don't know. I think I didn't know what I didn't know. You know, as a first-time entrepreneur, you have your dreams about what's going to happen to your company, and then reality hits and you're like, all right, let's take it with stride. And I'm feeling very proud at this moment of where our culture sits, at least when it comes to putting our employees first. And what I hope, of course, you know, I'm the COO, I'm a co-founder. I don't know this but I hope that we've created a place that people enjoy coming to work every day rather than, you know, feeling stuck like many people do in, you know, their 9-to-5s.
Mm-hmm. The buzzwords, you know, I would like to a little bit go deep dive into the buzzwords, especially with the diverse workforce and, you know, with the way, let's say, the millennials are, you know, looking forward to joining the offices and so forth. How do you see the transition of the millennials, you know, or how do they see the office environment now? You know, maybe, you know, the COVID is just a situation, but even before COVID, I'm sure there's a whole group of people who wants to join company in a certain culture, right? And when you look at your own workforce, Hannah, how do you see that, you know, as far as the working culture is concerned?
Yeah. Well, as a company run by millennials, and, you know, most everyone is a millennial, I think the barrier was a bit broken down for us as we were building for the future of work. Of people thought we were nuts by being a fully remote company and enabling remote work. I mean, it was like, you know, people like, how, that's not possible. You can't do that remotely. Like, it's so interesting because one of my best friends creates perfumes, and she's now able to do that remotely for one of the biggest perfumers in the world. Yeah. Tell me what we cannot do remotely again. So that, I think, was a shock. But I mean, I'll say this now, and I hope, I mean, I know that this is going to come to life, but I think we're all going to be blown away by Gen Z. They're already creators. You see Gen Z, they all have their own personal brands. They all have their own businesses. There's 15-year-olds running like really successful businesses out in, you know, in the entertainment world or in the creative world. Even one of my friends, her cousin who is 14, started selling masks during a pandemic and donating it all back to a hospital, and had made tens of thousands of dollars for that hospital, a 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. So I think that the market is going to be completely shaken when Gen Z gets into the workforce, because my theory is that Gen Z isn't going to settle for typical 9-to-5s, typical going into an office, typical old school ways of working. They're going to be the next wave of entrepreneurs like we've never seen before, right? We've seen a lot of entrepreneurs in the millennial world because I think we're, you know, starting to realize, hey, maybe your dreams are closer than they seem at the moment, thanks to a lot of the technology that's been in existence, like Slack that enables us to work remotely and communicate well, or Shopify that enables you to put up an e-commerce website in 10 minutes. That wasn't possible before. You'd have to pay a developer a crazy amount of money to get up your e-com website and feel it was nearly impossible. Well, I'm seeing this as Gen Z's coming in, and I would assume 80% or more will fact check me when the time comes. Will end up being entrepreneurial or freelance or working independently from the typical constraints of the 9-to-5.
Yeah, I think you put it together very nicely. I'm just thinking about myself and my own personal space. I have a daughter who is 11 and a half now. She asked me that, like what was the iPhone version when you were 10 or so, right? So, and then I said to her, like, you know, when I was 10, we used to listen to the radio, right? I mean, she was asking a version of iPhone when I was 10, right? So I said to her, like, you know, we just used to be very happy listening to radio, and that was our thing, you know? So, and I'm not that old, by the way, but still, you know, it's crazy the way technology has evolved, you know, over the years. And we used to think about, let's say, you know, iPhone used to be a big deal. Now it's not anymore, right? So there are other comparable mobile phones and maybe other accessories which are making our lives easier, right? And it's so rapid, you know, you need to really think about the way technology has evolved.
Oh my God. Yeah. Even my childhood, there was, I had no cell phone. maybe Black Mirror had something right where they've predicted some of these rapid technological pros and cons. We just want to make sure that technology doesn't do evil for the world. And so as long as we can continue to like progress and create things that actually matter and actually make a positive impact on people's lives or the environment or how people interact with one another or mental health, I think then we can be proud of what we're building. But I do think that there could always be a dark side to the technology that's coming out that I think every entrepreneur should be highly aware of and making sure that they're doing the best they can to make a positive impact on the world.
So what's the future like before I let you go? What's the future for WeTos and how do you see that future, let's say from a year from now?
Well, I think there's a lot of optimism again in this answer. Where we see WeTos a year from now is thousands or tens of thousands of studios using our system, a little bit like Shopify for services, having that empower them to build up their own studios and make more money from it in the ease of as little as 10 minutes like it does to start an e-com website at this moment. If we can solve the issue of people not going off and starting their own studio or being a freelancer because there's too much work or there's too much unknowns or it's too scary to do so. If we can solve that so that more and more people are becoming independent creators, I think we are going to be incredibly happy. And that's where I see our future continuing to scale. And then of course, as we continue to build on supporting individuals, networks, and getting them work through a marketplace, I think there's a big future for us at WeTos that we are incredibly excited about.
Awesome. Wonderful talking to you, by the way. I get to know a lot about how your company is operating and what kind of challenges that you're dealing with. And in this difficult time, it was a pleasure to learn companies that are struggling at the same time, being resilient, and then just trying to achieve the dream that they've seen. You know, so it's great talking to you, by the way.
Thank you so much. It's great talking to you as well. And I know I have got the operator brain on at WeTos on the co-founder side, but I'm always very excited to talk about particularly how things have changed since COVID because it has been an incredible, vast. All right, let's get this thing out to market. We're launching this 6 months sooner than we thought, and we're going heads down deep, which has been exciting, stressful, fun. Every emotion I can probably say right now would ring true.